to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get this hour going. It is Tuesday, March 26th, and we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Logan Gordon will join in a little bit later on this hour as we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Lots to talk about this hour. Daily Flames Roundtable. Matt Coronato back in the Flames lineup Tuesday. We'll talk about Daniil Miramanov this hour. Lots to get to. But first, let's kick off this hour on a Tuesday by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli. He's brought to you, as always, by Self Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit selftrailchrysler.com as Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. Mr. Saravalli, how are we doing on this Tuesday?
Pat, pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's a strange time in Flamesland.
Why is that?
Well, I've been doing this job or something similar to this job for, between 10, 15 years, been on Flames broadcast in some form or another, talking about the team for about that long, about 15 years, and only a few.
Old man.
I know I am. I'm ancient at this point.
You geriatric bleep.
I've got about 6 more months until you can officially make those jokes. But for now, still in my 30s.
It's all right. I still look older than you. That's the thing.
I wasn't going to say it, but you know, you did. So I'm not going to, disagree.
It's true.
There's only been a handful of times over the last 10, 15 years where the Flames have been this out of it this early. Like they're down to 0.1%. And I mean, essentially they're a 0% playoff team. They're 14 points back. They're not going to make it. They haven't been in a playoff spot all year long. And it's strange. And 2 years ago, less than 2 years ago, they were coming off a banner season and the first Battle of Alberta in more than three decades.
I was there.
Exactly. And you've seen and been all over how this team has gone from there to where we are now. I'm just curious as to how you reflect on how the Flames went from knocking on the door to maybe bursting through it to now they're very much in a retool. They're very much having to start over a little bit here.
Yeah, it is a long way from there to here, but I would say that in an odd way, and I'm sure Flames fans are feeling this, they're eating it, sleeping it, breathing it. It's this feeling that I think exists in the Calgary market right now is actually kind of refreshing, because think back to those last 15 years. Yes, there was a legitimate shot in that year of the Battle of Alberta before they were kind of, you know, disposed of by the Oilers. And sorry to say it that way, but going out in five was not anything that anyone saw coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like once that happened, it just changed everything, because there were so many contractual things to sort out and sift through. There was a lot of, certainly wasn't malcontent or discontent, but certain players had other wishes and different pulls in different directions. And once that happened with Gaudreau and Tkachuk, I mean, there was no putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. And I think, unfortunately, I use that phrase because that's kind of what the Flames and their playoff hopes have been for the last 15 years. It has kind of felt like a team that was held together by duct tape, and not to say it wasn't being properly built, or that they didn't have the right foundation in place. They did, but when that was cut out from under them, they had to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I said it probably feels refreshing for some fans is the goal shouldn't be to just make the playoffs and have a competitive team. My personal philosophy and viewpoint on this, it's not everyone's, and I don't own a team. I'm not a manager of a team. But to me, the only question you should be asking yourself in September or when you're building your team in June is, do we have an authentic shot to win a Stanley Cup this year? Are we in the 5 or 7 teams that are in the inner circle of teams with a chance to win? And I don't mean, can we go on a miracle run? Can we be the 8th seed and do what the Florida Panthers did last year? That's BS. And it's BS because that Panthers team the year prior won the President's Trophy. And the league is littered with Cinderella teams that have made surprising upset runs that, oh, by the way, never got the job done in the end. They didn't actually win. So I think this idea of trying to just be in the mix is, it's really an exercise in self-gratification, in that you just don't, you're telling yourself you're there, but you're really not.
Yeah.
And I think that's what this team is actually taking a step back to answer that question finally and forcefully, which is, hey, the next time we're back, we're going to be in that inner circle. We're going to have an authentic chance to win. And I think that's all that really matters.
The timeline that they're hoping to get this done in, and you and I have talked extensively about this, but you know, they're kind of looking at a 2 to 4 year stretch. If they can get this team back to being where you're talking about in that 3 to 4 year range, I think they'd feel like mm-hmm. that's successful. Is that, in your eyes, realistic with where they are, with the assets they've accumulated and could accumulate, so on and so forth? Is that something that is an attainable target, do you think?
It is, because other teams have shown that it's possible. The Rangers, the Kings, other teams have taken a step back and rebooted and have become contenders again. And the real answer to the question, though, so is it possible or feasible? Yes. But I can't really answer the question until I see how the Flames have drafted and developed.
Yeah.
2 years in. Not every pick is going to be a hit. Most, in fact, in the NHL aren't. That's the way it works. But I think what you have to be excited about in just 9 months of Craig Conroy and his team being on the job is that it seems like they've done a really nice job scouting to this point, meaning their eye for talent has been pretty spot on. Sharon Govich, no one really knew what to expect coming in, but he's lived up to every expectation plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going to happen with Kuzmenko. I'm curious to see what happens with some of these other guys that are a lot closer, whether it's Grushnikov or Brustevich or whatever it might be, whoever it might be. Let's see what the early returns are like before I go about giving you some long-term answers.
Yeah, fair enough. And you know, the thing for me is that, because I do think there are some examples. I mean, the most difficulty buying into in terms of a path that they could emulate is Vancouver. And credit to you, because I remember vividly September or early October, you and I talking about the Canucks, and you kind of called exactly what's happened. Elias Pettersson,
Thatcher. No, I mean, look, not to this extent, you're giving me too much credit. I didn't think that they'd be challenging for the President's Trophy. But I do remember having a conversation with you in the preseason where you were just saying to me, hey, look, like, it's great that you think Van is going to be a playoff team. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what you said.
Exactly. And I'll take the hard L on that one, because they've had a hell of a year. And you know, the thing that maybe I didn't give them enough credit for is that they did have the core to build around. And I've long been a big-time Elias Pettersson defender, to be perfectly honest with you, when some of the detractors had come out over the last couple of years. And Quinn Hughes is now a Norris Trophy, perennial Norris Trophy candidate, and they have their Vezina Trophy quality goaltender in Thatcher Demko. They kind of have those three cornerstones you can go out and build around, and you can re-sign a JT Miller, and you can revamp your blue line like they've done, and add a little depth at forward. And next thing you know, building around elite players like that, you've got yourself a high-end team. And that's the one where I'm like, the Flames don't have those pillars yet. Maybe they have it in Dustin Wolf, but in terms of that Norris Trophy caliber defenseman and that number one center, that's going to be the biggest challenge now. And I'm curious to see how Craig Conroy goes about tackling that challenge and bringing in a cornerstone or two, whether it be draft or whether
it
be...
way to bring it in. You're
unless you're Vegas
already. He hinted already that they're not going to be able to trade for that player, and that they're very unlikely, even though they're going to sign some guys, none of those guys become available.
Yeah,
it's only through the draft.
The only one I can think of is Eichel and the Vegas Golden Knights. It's the only Vegas is
that's
Vegas.
Different though.
It is. It absolutely
well, it's different
is.
Because if Jack Eichel was obviously he was available. He's not. He wasn't approving a trade to go to the Calgary Flames.
Exactly. And you know, the Vegas Golden Knights have the ability to bring players like that in, and other teams don't. So I'm with you. It has to be via the draft, and it has to be a situation where in the next three drafts here, 24, 25, 26, where they have stockpiled and maybe continue stockpiling, they're going to have to hit on some of these guys to find that guy they can build around. And then the players like Rasmus Anderson and Connor Zeri and Martin Pospisil and Matt Coronato, these guys can be nice homegrown guys they can build around, but they still need those pillars, and that's going to be the number one priority and the biggest challenge for Conroy.
Well, it is, but here's what I would say is one comforting thought as you head into this 2024 draft.
Mm-hmm.
And that is there is top-end talent in Macklin Celebrini, but this draft, I think more than a lot of others, is... And I'm not a prospect expert, and I don't claim to want to be one,
mm-hmm.
but I do talk to all these scouts and people that are watching this on a daily basis. And they say this draft from two on is really beauty in the eye of the beholder. Like, you could be finding high level pillar type pieces at 14 and 16 and 8 in this draft.
Right.
Not a bad place to be.
Nope. Not at all.
You got to hit. It's all it comes down to. You hit, you win.
Yep.
You miss, you got your work cut out for you when you don't have those pillars. And guess what? To be fair, every team has its own challenges. The Vancouver Canucks had pillars in place. They had zero structure. And they didn't have any complementary pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It's still hard to go out and find complementary pieces. And it's still hard to hire the right coach and find discipline, attention to detail, and structure.
Yep.
So there's different crosses for each franchise to bear. I think the hardest thing, though, is to get the pillars. When you can start to stack a few of them up, like Chicago, they've got a decent starting point or a real good starting point with Connor Bedard. They still need more. They're no different.
Yep.
The Flames have Wolf, maybe the hardest position to check off. And no guarantee, but now you can go about that quest on defense and at forward.
Yep. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. Joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Flames will be involved in the draft lottery this year, but when is the draft lottery taking place, my friend?
Sounds like either May 6th or May 7th. That's what the GMs were told at the meeting last week. And the NHL hasn't finalized it yet because they're waiting on playoff scheduling and to see what the best TV window that they can find for the draft lottery would be. And mm-hmm. just going to steer you, if you're a Flames fan, to the daily updated draft lottery tracker that's on our website. Right now, the Flames, of course, 11th from the bottom, they have a 3% chance as of today.
As of today. Couple of things around the league just before we started. You tweeted out.
You said nothing to play for, by the way. That's it right there. And that's the thing is no one's going to, you know, Craig Conroy was super clear in our conversation last week that he would never advocate for tanking and losing. But if you're looking for something to at least check the standings for on a daily basis, that's it.
That's it. What you just tweeted this out before we came on, and something that you and I have been talking about for quite some time. We've been talking a lot about escrow and how escrow and the COVID pandemic and revenues, so on and so forth, played into what the salary cap was going to be for this season. Sounds like it could have been they could have bumped this year's salary cap higher in hindsight, hey?
Yeah, I mean that to me is the real takeaway from the story, but I did just post it and it's essentially, you know, before people's eyes glaze over or swerve off the road with us talking about escrow, players had 6% withheld this year from their checks. So essentially they've been bringing home 94% of their published salary. If revenue continues at the $6.2 billion that the league has projected, if that number is accurate, they could get half of that back. So another 3% returned when all the accounting is done and audited. And really what that tells me is the league had put up a big fight before the season started last summer because the NHLPA wanted to increase the cap. And they said, well, we can increase the cap, but you got to give us something for it. And they said, well, no, we're not giving you something for it. Like, you know, we can increase it and we can negotiate. But then they said, well, okay, well, we can only increase the cap for this season if you also bump up the escrow withholding percentage from 6% to whatever the league was asking for. And they said, no, there's a way to, you know, mildly increase this cap a million or two and still not have to touch what's being taken out of checks for escrow. The NHLPA didn't budge. The league didn't either. This season, we went into a fourth straight year of frozen salary cap at 83.5. And now players are getting upwards of half of that back, which means that in the meantime, not only did teams have less money in the system to spend and could have certainly used more flexibility, it also came at the cost of essentially 25 full-time union jobs because instead of a 23-man roster, a lot of teams, because they were smushed up against the cap, had to carry 20 or 21, and that results in the loss of full-time union-paying jobs.
Yep. Finally, Frank, and I know you got a role here, but I do have to ask you as we wrap up about the discourse over the last, I don't want to say like 48, 72 hours and has come to a head on this Tuesday in a big way. About Zach Hyman and being a 50 goal scorer. There's been, I was like, when he scored 50, I was like, geez, Zach Hyman just scored 50 goals. He has 86 goals since he joined the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, this is coming from a Calgary guy. Like that's an incredible success story coming from a guy. I believe you coined the term the league's best press player. And he goes to Edmonton and he went from being a hell of a player in Toronto to being an elite goal scorer with the Edmonton Oilers. And yet there's been this giant narrative about how he's not a legit 50 goal scorer or, you know, whatever the different odd takes have been. To wrap up, I'm just curious your perspective on some of the attempts to discredit Zach Hyman and his 50 goals.
I think it's despicable, to be honest. You look at Zach Hyman and the season that he's had, the career that he's had for an undersized fifth round pick who went the college hockey route and played the whole time. He's grown into such an incredible force in this league for being an undersized guy that there's nothing to it other than work. And it wasn't just the idiot that posted the video today, which you can find on my feed and my commentary. It's also the guy that posted another video earlier this week about he literally had a clip of all 50 goals that Hyman scored this year, and he rated them as ethical or unethical, as if on the scoreboard they distinguish, meaning that was Zach Hyman essentially just cleaning up the garbage for Connor McDavid, or what? Did he actually do the work on his own?
Thank you, Frankie. It's good to chat with you as always. Good luck at tryouts, and we'll talk to you next week, hey?
Yeah, minor hockey season, crazy enough, begins tonight.
Appreciate it, buddy. You have yourself a great day, hey?
See ya.
Frank Saravalli is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays, every Tuesday, and he's brought to you, as always, by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk, or Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you as always by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. Steinberg, Logan Gordon, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, Matt Coronato comes back into the lineup on Tuesday night in Chicago. He's been a healthy scratch the last two games. Looks like, and we'll find out for sure at warm-up Tuesday night, but looks like he'll be on a line with Kevin Rooney and A.J. Greer in this game. But I'm just curious, how are we feeling about Matt Coronato going into next season, knowing how his rookie year in pro hockey is gone? Just what's our feel on Matt Coronato as the Flames go down the stretch and as we start looking ahead to next year?
Well, first of all, it'll be a bit of a homecoming for Matt Coronato in Chicago tonight, because he spent a couple of seasons playing for the USHL's Chicago Steel, and actually won a Clark Cup championship with them back in 2021. So I'm sure he's going to have some friends inside of United Center cheering him on. But you know, I'm still pretty excited about Matt Coronato as a prospect. And I know that he hasn't emerged at the NHL level yet, but I'm still pretty convinced that he at some point in time will. He's had a really strong first season in the AHL, leads the Wranglers with 42 points in 40 games. And even though he's only got 6 points in 22 games with the Flames, I think he's done a pretty good job adjusting to playing some different roles at the NHL level than he's probably ever played before. Now, this is a guy who's scored a lot of goals at every single level that he's played at. They've been not easy to come by with the Wranglers, but easier. He's got 15 goals so far this season, but they have been tougher to come by as a member of the Flames. Less time, less space, playing against better goaltenders, against a higher level of competition everywhere on the ice. And it's just been an adjustment for the first year of pro. But you know, he's got a great shot. There's no doubt about that. But I think the thing that has impressed me the most about Matt Coronato, well, two things really. Number one, he is a guy who clearly projects to be a top nine forward. I actually think he's done a pretty good job playing at a fourth line role at times this season. And number two, and I think it's one of the reasons why he's had some success playing on the fourth line, his work ethic is unquestioned. He's like a dog on a bone out there. So I think once he figures out how to create a little bit more time and space for himself so he can use that great shot that he's got, I think he'll start scoring goals at the NHL level as well.
I think you should be incredibly excited about Matt Coronato heading into next season. I was curious what his year was going to look like, knowing the Flames had that need for a right shot winger, guys, that was going to bring scoring to the lineup. And I still think the Flames made the right decision after getting a small sample size with Matt at the beginning of the season. And that was to go down to the American Hockey League in his first pro season and continue to develop as a player and as a pro. And I think without a doubt, he hit every mark that you wanted to from his time in the American Hockey League, 42 points in 40 games. And to me, the most exciting thing about this, Pat, is that, as Derek's mentioned, this time around, later in the season, he's looked more comfortable and he's looked more like an NHLer to me than he did at the beginning of the season. I think it's very easy to see the parts of Matt Coronado's game that have grown from the beginning of the season in training camp to where we are this late in the NHL season. And I think that's a very exciting thing because I think you can tell that Matt's adjusting to the pro game. He's understanding what his coaches are asking of him. And now, had he gone down to the American Hockey League and struggled to do the things that we knew he was good at and scoring and being an offensive threat on a consistent basis, maybe I'd have a different answer. But just because that hasn't come up on a regular basis at the NHL level doesn't lead me to worry that there's just such a gap and such a change from the college level that he was used to playing at to the everyday of pro hockey. I think to see that kind of growth in his game from the beginning of the season to where we are now, guys,
yeah,
should give you every expectation that a full summer of training and getting better is going to lead Matt Coronado to a very good spot once we get back into, you know, another hockey season in September.
Yeah, I'm actually feeling pretty good about the way things are trending for him. I think that this is going to go down as a really important developmental year, and I really have noticed a lot of things that are significantly higher end or at a significantly higher level on this most recent recall than in his earlier stretches in the NHL, guys. And there's a couple things that I would point to. I know the Flames have been really working with him and pushing him to, you know, not all that dissimilar to some of the conversations they had with Yegor Sharangovich earlier in the year, really wanted him to work on his battle level and start winning more one-on-one puck battles and start winning more of those 50-50 battles on the boards and that type of stuff. And I've seen a significant step forward in that regard. I think it comes with just the confidence in oneself going up against other players, other men in this league. I think that it takes some time, and I think going and playing the high leverage minutes he did in the American League really, really helped. So I think that is one area that I think he's really gotten better at. I think his details have taken a step forward. You know, one of the things that I noticed a lot before he went down to the AHL and when he has been on his prior stints in the NHL, a lot of times, like those details, you know, at the end of a shift, getting a puck deep and giving that extra second, second and a half to change as opposed to healing it or not getting it hard into the zone, that's a big-time swing in terms of the result. All of a sudden, one allows for a full line change and allows for proper gaps and proper defending of a breakout or an entry. Whereas the other, if you don't do that properly, you don't get your full change in, or if you do, you're not in your gaps, and all of a sudden an entry into the offensive zone becomes that much easier. And I've seen those details, those things take a big step forward. And just his overall play away from the puck continues to be an area that he clearly is getting better at. So I've been really, really encouraged with what I've seen from Coronado on this most recent recall. It's leading to more offense. It's leading to more shot attempts, all those types of things. And I think it's going to really, I think this season, guys, is going to really serve Matt well heading into his sophomore season in pro hockey.
Yeah, I would agree. And as you alluded to, and I thought Logan made a pretty important point as well, going from college to pro is a big jump, way bigger than going from junior to pro, in my opinion. Now, college players, generally speaking, are older than graduating junior players, so they do have that going for them. But, man, the college schedule and the college lifestyle, a lot different from the professional schedule and the professional lifestyle. So I do think that this is going to be a really important year for development as Matt Coronado gets used to the rigors of playing in the AHL and in the NHL. But you know, he's got a really unique skill set. And between now and the end of the season, I'd like to see him spend some time in the top nine. And you know, if the Flames want to leave the Backlund and Kadri lines together, then play him on a line with Huberto and Sharangovich in the spot that Kuzmenko is currently in. Let's see him playing with some guys who can set him up, who have a higher skill level, with all due respect to the guys who he's likely going to be playing with on the fourth line tonight, and see him in some situations where he can maybe flourish offensively. But even in a fourth line role, I do think that there's an opportunity to use him on one of your power play units, probably the second unit. And if you can get some special teams time from guys on your fourth line, kind of like the Flames get from Kevin Rooney, who's been a big part of their penalty kill since the Elias Lindholm trade. If you can get some power play minutes out of a guy like Matt Coronato, even if he's playing on your fourth line, then just takes a little bit off the plate of some of those guys playing in the top nine and puts him in a position to succeed and to hopefully do what he's always done best, and that's put the puck in his opponent's
head. Yeah. Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills alongside Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. You know, it's funny, guys. We know where things sit right now in the Western Conference standings. We know where the Flames are in the Western Conference standings, so on and so forth. But they're playing Chicago on this Tuesday night, and one of the games that I think I will, actually two of the games that I think I will remember most over these last two seasons in terms of games where you're like, geez, that one is an absolute gut punch, would be last April's game at the Dome where the Flames lost to Chicago, where that basically sealed their fate. It was, I think, the game after that huge game in Winnipeg where the Flames got back within a point of a playoff spot and then coughed it up and egregiously lost to Chicago that night. And then the second one would be that 4-3 loss in Chicago on January 7th. Two losses that, just in terms of the reaction from the fan base and the overall conversations that surrounded them, are going to be really hard to forget. And look, we know the Flames are missing the playoffs this year for a number of different reasons, but I guess just how do we reflect on and how do we put into words over the last two seasons the struggles Calgary has had against teams like the Hawks, Blue Jackets, San Jose, just teams like that where, you know, they when they needed to pick up points well below them in the standings, maybe they have not done a good enough job at doing so.
Pat, I wish I could give you an explanation. I mean, I've asked coaches, players, managers the same question countless times, and none of them have been able to explain it to me, so I'm not sure how to explain it to our listeners. The only thing that makes sense to me, and we're not just talking about this season's addition to the Flames. You go back to, what was it, 2021, where they just couldn't beat the Senators, and that probably cost them a playoff spot. You go back to last season, you could argue their lack of success in their season series versus a Blackhawks team that wound up getting the first overall pick cost them a playoff spot. They only missed by 2 points. You win one more game against the Blackhawks last season, and maybe you're in. You're at least into a tie points-wise for that second wild card spot in the Western Conference. And it's been something that's carried over to this season. And the only way I can explain it, and this is just me, you know, trying to put two and two together and hoping that it equals four, is the Flames are a team, especially this season, that has had a tendency to play up to their opponents, but also down to their opponents. So it's like they get geared up to play against good teams. They play the right way, and they've won a lot of those games. I'm not sure if it's a lack of motivation. I'm not sure if it's them taking their opponent too lightly, but they have played down to their competition too often this season. And certainly, and I would say both games against the Blackhawks, guys, I know they won one of them, but remember, that was a 1-0 win
yep.
in the final game before the All-Star break. And they did not play well in that game. They just beat a bad team. And also, they've played the Blackhawks twice this year without Connor Bedard. So he's their best player already at the age of 18, so tonight might be tougher than the first two games were. But I just think that this is a team that has had a tendency to take teams around them or below them in the standings too lightly for a number of years. And you know, 2022 was probably the exception to that rule because I thought they did a pretty good job against teams that were below them in the standings. But most teams were below them in the standings that year. But, yeah, you look at last season and this season, and they've just played down to their competition far too often. And for me, it's probably the single biggest reason why they failed to get to the playoffs last year and are likely going to fail to get there again this year.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with an explanation for it. For me, it boils down to really, guys, good teams or great teams find a way to beat the less talented teams on a consistent basis. And, you know, Derek, you did a good job of sort of laying it out there as to the reasons why. And obviously, if the Flames had that answer, they would have used it a long time ago. So I don't know if it's playing down to their opponent or not taking them seriously, whatever the reason is. All I know is that there's a pretty clear discrepancy when it comes to the good teams or the best teams in the NHL, Pat, that go out and find a way to beat those teams on a regular basis, that don't let the talent gap between them and the bottom feeders of the NHL come back to haunt them nearly as often as it does for the Calgary Flames. And again, I can't put to words exactly why that is or how it's happened so often, because they've been reminded by it pretty loudly by fans, by us in the media, by just general observers that it's a really not good way of going about your business. And even at the end of this year, we'll look back and say, how did you let games against San Jose get away from you? Or these ones against Chicago, that 1-0 win, Derek's a good example. It was a snooze fest on Hockey Night in Canada before the All-Star break. They had no motivation whatsoever in a game they should have been able to dominate at home, and they barely got by on the skin of their teeth. Why that is, they'll have to answer that question themselves and figure it out. All I know is the best teams and the teams that I look at is the teams that are real contenders and playoff threats on a year-in, year-out basis. They don't let those teams do that to them. Maybe every now and then it happens because there are the other teams playing to win. There's motivation. There's all those sort of things that come into it. It's just, it's happened way too often to the Calgary Flames, and it is something they need to figure out going forward.
Yeah, and I do, guys, I honestly do believe that, you know, the talk about, and Logan, your point about how the good teams do more often than not beat the teams well below them in the standings, and I do think that is what separates the high-end teams from the middle-of-the-pack teams is to what extent they take care of business against the teams they're supposed to take care of business against. And, you know, I do, Willsey, thinking about when you said it, you know, that 21-22 team, that line absolutely feasted on,
yeah,
like, Gaudreau. Not to say that they weren't a good line against good teams, but so many of those high point nights were against bad teams. Tkachuk, Gaudreau, and Lindholm just went out and paved over bad teams. And that's just something that this team has not done well enough over the last two seasons. And yeah, I don't know the reasons why. I don't know if it's taking them too lightly. I don't know if it's, you know, feeling fat and sassy. I don't know if it's the fact that they're just a middle of the road team and middle of the road teams are inconsistent. I don't know exactly what it is, but I sure do think back over the last two seasons and wonder how a lot of narratives would be different if in half of their games that they've kind of let slip against the not so great opposition, they did take care of business. And maybe we are talking about a team last year that makes the playoffs. Maybe we are talking about a team this year that's a whole lot closer than 14 points on March 26th. So it's, do I know the reasons why definitively? No. But I sure do know how much it has really stung this group over the last two seasons.
Yeah, it sure has. And you make a really interesting point, Pat. The Flames don't have those elite players anymore, at least not two of them, like they did with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. And centering those two guys, I would say Elias Lindholm was an elite player as well. So when you don't have those guys who can put you on their back and kind of almost single-handedly carry it to wins, then you've got to do it as a group. And the Flames are a team that, you know, last season and this season are built to win with four lines and three pairings and good goaltending. And if they don't get to all or most of that, then chances are the game's not going to go their way. But it's interesting because good teams, teams that are playoff teams, certainly teams that are Stanley Cup contenders, can probably get away with a B or a C game against bad teams. The Flames can't do that. Maybe a B game, but definitely not a C game. So I just think that They haven't had enough A or B games against the bad teams over the last couple of years. And if they do have an A game or a B game against the Blackhawks tonight, I like their chances to win. If they don't, it could be a high-scoring, sloppy affair at United Center in Chicago. So we'll see what we get.
We will see you very shortly, Mr. Wills. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. See you soon.
He is Derek Wills. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday. The Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And our Tuesday Flames Talk rolls on. Steinberg and Logan Gordon, it's time to go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. And Logo, the Flames are absolutely playing the wheels off of Daniil Miramanov right now, hey? But do we have any idea what the Flames have in this player right now? Do we know what Miramanov is as of yet? Because I'm still not exactly sure what we're talking about, but I sure am fascinated by the ice times that we've seen. Look at the ice times the last four games. He played 22:52 versus Montreal, 22:34 versus Washington, a career-high 24:50 Saturday in Vancouver, and then Sunday played 22-22 against the Buffalo Sabres. So four straight games above 22 minutes. He has never played more than 20 minutes in his NHL career since getting to Calgary. In his three prior seasons of work, including this season, has never played more than 20 minutes. Now he's playing that routinely every single night. Logo, they're obviously trying to learn about this player. They're obviously trying to see if he can play some high leverage minutes. And I know that when the Flames made the deal with Vegas to send Noah Hanifin to the Golden Knights, they were really, really enamored by this player and have been for quite some time. They feel like Miramanov at the age of 26 is one of those players that has not been given the opportunity for good reason, because Vegas is a very good team and a Stanley Cup contender, so on and so forth. When healthy, they've got a deep blue line. But he's never had the opportunity to show exactly what he is at the NHL level. And the Flames believe that given that opportunity, there's something pretty special here. They're clearly trying to prove themselves right or wrong and figure out if they're scouting on him is correct right now. He is playing an average of like 23 minutes a night right now.
Yeah, it's been hard to go by the game sheet and not be impressed with the amount of minutes that Miramanov's taken on. And now I think the natural reply to that would be, well, they've lost a lot of minutes, right? Tanev's gone, sure. Hanifin's gone. There's a lot of minutes up for grabs, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get those on a consistent basis. There's a lot of competition on the Flames blue line from a lot of guys in somewhat similar spots to Miramanov. Not identical, but I mean in terms of guys trying to prove what they are at the NHL level. There's a competitive push there from a Joel Hanley, Braden Paul. Those kind of guys are trying to make a similar impression as Miramanov is. But I think you're right. Pretty clearly, the Calgary Flames, knowing that Miramanov hasn't spent a lot of time playing lately, he's coming off of pretty serious surgery going back to last March, and you know, wanting to find out exactly what there is in this player and trying to figure it out quickly. I like, in a very small sample size, what it's been so far for Miramanov. It's been 12 games with the Calgary Flames. I think he's earned a lot of the coaching staff's trust pretty quickly. I think that they're quite enamored with what he can be offensively, and the fact that not only does he use his shot on a pretty regular basis, I like how he's able to get his shot through a crowd, Pat. That's yeah. One thing that has really impressed me. It's not going into feet and sticks in front of the net. He's finding a way to get it on goal, and that leads to either two of the goals that he scored or good opportunities coming. And I think that power play especially is somewhere that's going to benefit from more of that from Miramanov. But I think it's a pretty clear indication that at least early on, two things are true. The Flames want to know what they have in Miramanov, and B, the minutes are showing me pretty clearly that Ryan Huska and the Flames coaching staff have liked, at least early on, the results they've gotten from him.
And he is not being sheltered. He is not being.
That's why it's so impressive to me is because he's barely played this year. In like a calendar year, he's barely played.
It's hard not to root for the player. He's a really easy player to cheer for. This was him on Tuesday morning in Chicago as he talks about trying to take advantage of these opportunities.
It means everything, you know. Just like I said, you can only dream about those things. And, you know, I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity and for the ice time, for the trust. And I'm just, you know, just fighting every single shift. You can't take a shift off. And you know, it's been busy, been a lot of games, you know, busy schedule. You know, but we gotta keep going. We gotta keep learning, keep improving our game. Doesn't matter what's happening outside. It doesn't matter the standings and stuff. We have to focus on every single period, every single game, and we just gotta move forward.
So, I mean, like, he clearly has a lot of gratitude for being acquired by another team and now being given an opportunity to play far larger minutes and take on a far larger role. Look, it's a small sample size, but if you are an analytically driven person and you believe in analytics, in the 8 games Miramanov has played as a member of the Flames, his 5-on-5 metrics are really popping. So let me just give you a little bit of a taste as to what some of those analytics look like. At 5-on-5, this courtesy of our friends over at Natural Stat Trick. He leads the team, all players. Nobody has a higher expected goals percentage at 5-on-5 than Daniil Miramanov. He's over 60% of the team's expected goals when on the ice. His possession rate, shot rate, Corsi rate, 53.3%. High danger chance rate of 57.4%, so ratio of for and against. And Logo, he's done this all with an offensive zone start of under 45%. He's currently at 43.3%, so starting more shifts in his own zone than he is in the offensive zone. On top of all that, since being put on a pairing with Mackenzie Weegar, those two have been deployed as their, you know, top shutdown pairing. Weegar and Miramanov are the guys going up more often than not against the best players on the other side. So for a guy who has barely played this year, for a guy who has at no point in his career been a full-time NHLer, and now the Flames are just hammering him with lots of minutes and difficult minutes. Like, they clearly believe that they have something here, or at the very least, they believe that there's a chance that they've got something on their hands, something special on their hands, or an untapped resource on their hands. And from what I've seen through the 8 games, it's too small a sample size to say anything definitively.
For sure.
But just based on what I've seen, what the numbers are saying, what I've seen with my own two eyes at home games, I don't know. Are there some things that you're like, yeah, probably needs to clean that up, probably needs to do some work in his own zone, probably a few times needs to work on his shot selection in terms of, let's not put it in some ankles. That could end up going the other way. But I kind of lean towards, there might be something here as well. It's early, but I'm leaning in that direction too.
Well, I wonder how much of it too is his age and the fact that he is 26, Pat. And let's be honest, there isn't a lot of development time left for a guy at 26. There might not be any, to be fair. So if you're Craig Conroy and the management staff in that deal with Vegas, and you're looking at somebody that you think needs and can make an immediate impact, why not go full bore on it? I honestly wouldn't mind seeing a similar, and it's different for forwards, and I understand it's not apples to apples comparison, but I wouldn't mind seeing a similar thing with Andrei Kuzmenko, in the sense of, look, we don't have a lot of time to figure out what you are at this level. You're kind of past that great, you know, Connor Zeri, Pospisil, Coronado, those kind of guys. I've got more time for that conversation.
Because they're younger.
Exactly. You're 26, 27, that kind of age. I need to know if you're an NHLer right now, or what you can give me at the NHL level as soon as possible, so that I can figure out what we're doing with you on a long-term basis. And I think that's how they've approached things with Miramanov. And I've enjoyed it, because I just don't think there is time to waste. Even in a season like this where you might consider it a lost season since they're not going to the playoffs. If they can determine that they feel like on the Daniil Miramanov is going to be a key member of their top six heading into next year, then I'd say that's an important piece of information that you picked up, right? It's going to help determine what Craig Conroy does at the draft and what he does in free agency. I think all of that is important in all of this. And I really do wonder how much the age is playing a factor in it as to them saying, look, it's now or never. We're going to give you every opportunity to show us that you can be a full-time NHLer. Prove us right or prove us wrong, and we'll go from there.
Yep. I've liked him as the team's number one power play guy. I still, going back to Monday's conversation, I still think the guy that has the most potential as a power play quarterback is as the guy at the top of the number one unit is Anderson.
But you know what the difference is between the two of them, right? And it's what Brad Lambert said on Monday's show.
Shooting. Yeah.
I think that's as simple as it is. I think Rasmus, you're right, could overtake him in that role pretty easily if he used his shot more. But I think right now, given where the power play's been this season, whoever's more willing to put pucks on net and create that sort of offense that way, which is clearly what they're looking for, I think that's where they're leaning. And if Rasmus starts to do that on a more consistent basis, with you 100%, I think he can absolutely be the guy to put.
Yeah, I just think he's got the tool. Like, he's got all the tools, but you're right. I mean, if you're not using those tools, then
somebody else has to.
Exactly.
So, and Miramanov's shown a pretty consistent offensive flair that way, whether it be at 5-on-5 or on the power play. So, until Rasmus wants to show differently when it comes to that shot, and clearly something that Dan Lambert and the coaching staff have had conversations with him about, we'll use somebody else in the time being. Yep. And Miramanov's, I think, done a pretty good job for a guy 12 games into his Flames career.
I am interested to see how this evolves. Some of the work inside his own blue line, I think, needs some work. But you don't play against, like, you don't put up the have the outputs analytically or underlying like Miramanov has done so far against really good opposition. You don't do that by fluke. You don't do that only because of how good your defense partner is. And I do think playing with Uyghur is helping him, no doubt about it. I think McKenzie's been their best defenseman, especially now on the roster, is their best defenseman. It's kind of had the best season of all their active D and guys who are still with the team. So I do think playing with Uyghur is helping quite a bit, but you have to be a pretty good player to go out and be on a shutdown pair and not get completely exposed. And so far, I don't think Miramanov has. And, you know, nothing about watching him looks super sexy because he is such a big body that the skating doesn't look like, from an eye test standpoint, he does not look like this graceful and high-end skater, but he skates pretty well. He gets there. He moves well. He's still coming back from knee surgery, which is the other thing. And the Flames keep on reminding us of that. Like, Craig Conroy has reminded people a few times about how, and also let's not forget, it takes a while. Ask Mick about how long it takes to come back from full-on reconstructive knee surgery. You're back playing. Your knee can handle it. But, like, the confidence and the comfort level and being comfortable in your knee's ability to have that full mobility, it takes time. So,
and then throw in a new team, a new system, a D partner you've never worked with.
Yep.
And I bet you the list of things that Daniil Miramanov lists as things that, you know, make him feel comfortable on a regular basis are probably well off of his usual standards, right? The surgery, everything else that goes in part of it, it's, you've never been in Calgary before. You were working your way back with Henderson. Now you're in the NHL playing 20 minutes a night. Like, it's been a big change in circumstance and situation for a guy like that. And you're right. It's a very small sample size. No one here is proclaiming that he's, you know, earned himself a roster spot for the next 5 years or anything like that. But I think you have to be pretty happy with one of the few NHL pieces that came back so far for the Flames and all the trades that they've made this year. At least the potential's been there, right? It's been. I think you can start to see where the Flames were excited about bringing this guy in.
And one of the things that they said immediately upon acquiring him is that they really like his offense, and they feel like his offense can translate from the American League to the NHL level. He's already got a couple goals as a member of the Flames. Yeah, I'm really interested to see where this thing goes. A few texts, 960-960. This says, totally agree with you, Logo. They should do the exact same thing with Kuzmenko as you suggested. Give him every chance with good players in garbage time. And this from Kevin and Carstairs. Wasn't Giordano undrafted and didn't really get much playing time until he was 23 or 24? That's quite comparable. Yeah, I mean, it took a little while for Mark Giordano to get high-end playing time. And he ended up deciding to go to play in the Russian Super League before the KHL even existed. He went and played in the Russian Super League.
He signed that infamous three-way contract, I believe.
That's how he started. So the summer after the run in summer of 2004, he came to a development camp, I believe, and out of that development camp, he signed a three-way deal. Rob Kerr always tells the story. I think Dennis Weidman was also at that camp, and he didn't end up signing it. Something like that. There was another player who was there. Anyway, long story short, Mark Giordano signed a three-way contract. Doesn't even exist anymore. Three-way contract, which covers the ECHL, AHL, and the NHL. They don't even exist anymore.
Which is interesting, but so
that was one of the changes came from that lockout that then followed the 2004 Cup run.
Unfair. I mean, as far as development time, he's sort of a year behind his age given the surgery that he had, too.
Yes. I think that's probably
games played and just overall experience mixed in there, too. So, yeah, 25 really more so, probably a fair age as to where he is developmentally as far as his skill set goes.
Yep.
And only had what? He's been in with Vegas. He was 2021, 2022. He signed with them undrafted. Hasn't really played a ton since then with the NHL team. So interesting to see what happens here.
That is our look inside hockey on this Tuesday for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Calangary, top products curated for Calgarians. And we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today. It's Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Matt Coronato back into the lineup for the Flames on Tuesday. He'll get back in, and sounds like Dryden Hunt will be the guy coming out in Chicago. And you sure want to see a lot of Coronato down the stretch. I know that's something that I'm really big on. Like, if you were to ask me one of the things I'd like to see between now and the end of the regular season, they got 12 games to go. I'd like to see 12 games for Matt Coronato. I'd like to see him in the lineup on a regular basis between now and the end of the regular season. And maybe it starts on the fourth line, and as you move further into April, so on and so forth, maybe he starts getting some more opportunities. Get him onto that number two power play. Get him onto a line with Huberdeau or something like that. I would like to see a lot of Coronato usage down the stretch, because I think for a guy in his first professional season who has, in my eyes, taken some big steps in terms of his readiness to play in the NHL, I think getting a stretch of games and a pretty decent stretch of games is going to be important for him going into the summertime.
And you mean in the spot he's in for the game against Chicago, or a spot in, say, higher up in the lineup?
I think both. You know, I mean, maybe it starts with him being a fourth line right winger, but I think later on, like, as you know, seven games to go, something like that, I think that the more that he can play, the better, and the more the Flames can use him in some higher up the depth chart spots, I think would be really good for him.
Yeah, I'm sort of torn on this, because while I've certainly liked Matt's game a lot more on the fourth line the last couple of weeks since his most recent call-up, I still don't think that he's getting the most out of that opportunity. With all due respect to A.J. Greer and Kevin Rooney, you know, all things considered heading into next year, you don't want him with those two guys again. You want to see him up with Azeri or on a line with Huberdeau, or, you know, maybe with Backlund and Coleman, something like that. maybe would work for them. I would just, I don't think it's a waste of time by any stretch for him to be playing NHL minutes. I certainly would much rather see him in the lineup on the fourth line than being a healthy scratch. I just, if this is the plan the rest of the way down the stretch for the Calgary Flames, I wonder if it wouldn't be more productive to see him go back to the American Hockey League and get big first line minutes with that club rather than fourth line minutes at the NHL. I'm kind of stuck on that right now because I'm with you. I'd like to see more of him in a more prominent role because I just don't think the fourth line is where he's going to be or where you want him to be in the long term. And it's better than nothing, but is it where he's gaining the most to develop over the last couple of weeks before going back for the Calder Cup playoffs in the American Hockey League? I'm just not sure.
I agree, and I think it's one of those situations where two things are true at the same time. I think it's better for him to be playing fourth line minutes than playing down the stretch in the American League. I do, only for this final stretch drive. I lean more toward just getting NHL time is important. But I also think it would be better for him to play higher up the depth chart than on the fourth line. So I think I think number one should be playing.
Yes.
Number two, even more ideal, would be getting some time further up the lineup.
Yeah, I'm really stuck in that valley between, you know, fourth line on the NHL or first line in the AHL right now. What's going to get him to a better spot if you're the Calgary Flames? I don't know. Either way, we agree on the basis of no more healthy scratch business down the stretch. I don't think they have any reason to not put Matt Coronato in the lineup on a nightly basis.
That'll start to wrap us up on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan. Thanks to Cam, our producers. He's Logan Gordon on Twitter at Fan960 Logan. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour of Flames Talk has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.